So that meant we had to find local funding. It's still going on. In fact, this city commission just recently expanded their right to take their mobile unit to exchange clean needles for dirty ones anywhere in the city. Initially, it was just one small area, basically in the heart of downtown, that they wanted this to run. Now they've understood the people benefit of something like that. That's a very forward-looking thing. Now, you know, we've got something apparently headed on the ballot.
Right, the decriminalize marijuana ballot initiative.
You know, and I said at the time I gave that speech, and I got some heat on it at the time. You know, you've got to be willing to experiment. You've got to be willing to try things. Our prisons, one of their recommendations of the drug task force was to do away with a state statute that said if you are caught carrying 491 grams of bad substance, you go to jail for life. Without possibility of, so 18-year-olds were going to spend 65 years at $4,000 to $5,000 a year for something like that. And Bill Milliken, who signed that into law when he was governor, got on our side of it when we took that to the legislature to do away with that. And we did away with that. And that was a recommendation from that drug task force. So we've got to understand that something like this, give it a try. What happens if it doesn't work? We back off.
We got to be able
to change.
We look
at it again. Look at Europe. I mean, there's countries all over Europe where they've decriminalized it. They haven't all fallen apart. And so I applauded these young people, and I said, you know, I'm going to support that. I think it's time to try something different. We're spending $300 and some billion at the federal level every year in the war on drugs, and we're not getting anywhere. I got one more important thing I want to talk to you about. I saw a very strange thing. When I was sitting in my like my 12th year as mayor, or maybe the 11th and 12th year, we'd have well-dressed people, suit, tie. I mean, they looked like madmen. And they'd come in well-spoken and everything else. And in this one occasion, this guy said, and I had, when there's a big crowd, I use 2 3-minute egg timers. And kind of a cute story there, because why do you need two? Well, I made people eyeball contact to me. I didn't want them taking off after picking on commissioners. They're going to address this commission. I'm the presiding officer. Talk to me. And I get eye contact, and I'd make some notes, but I'd be watching them. They'd be watching me. When I started my little just dollar and a quarter from the Dollar General store egg timer, they'd start talking to the egg timer. And they didn't go the full 3 minutes. They'd watch the sand disappearing, and they'd maybe talk. So I needed a fresh one. So I'd put the half-used one under my counter and put the new one for the next person. That let more people talk to us. So anyway, this hypothetical, well-suited guy got up and said, Mayor, I'm here to tell you tonight you don't have any right to even look at that. You shouldn't even be considering that. It's unconstitutional. We all know that, and it's just wrong. And he wanted to talk some more, and I interrupted him, which is violating my own rule. I said, let me tell you something. Three times now, I've asked the people of Grand Rapids to let me be their mayor. And three times they said, go ahead. And that meant I got to raise my hand, and I take an oath. And that oath is pretty simple. It is to look into and investigate things that will make the city grow and prosper, that are good for the city, good for the people of Grand Rapids. Make good decisions, and but do your homework, do your studying and whatnot. Now, you come in here and you tell me that we don't even have a right to look at this as your elected officials. What you don't know about the structure of government would fill volumes. You're asking me to violate my oath. And I'm not going to do that. I don't know whether this is a good idea or a bad one. That's why we're here listening to you, to see what the, you want to tell me what's wrong with this, the substance of this proposal, why you think it's not good policy. I'll give you a full 3 minutes from now to do that. But if you can't address that issue, then I suggest you sit down. And what's behind that? Guess what? When I was growing up here in Grand Rapids in the 40s and 50s, you could not get out of high school without about 3 visits to something called civics. Some in the elementary school, some in what was junior high then, seventh and eighth, and some in high school as a junior or senior. No law was ever passed to say civics is no longer to be taught. What happened is all the new required courses that got jammed in on kids at every level squeezed out things like civics. Now, when we, our founders, wrote and signed the Constitution in 1787 in Philadelphia. Benjamin Franklin signed it, and he left Constitution Hall.
Right.
He's walking down the street. There's one. He lived in Philadelphia. One of his buddies who came up and said, "Mr. Franklin, what kind of government have you got?" And he said, "It's a republic, if you can keep it."
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson understood exactly what he meant by that, because it was on his watch as president that the jumpstart finally got going on free public education for every citizen, a sight the world had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our legacy brought down now.
Right.
But guess what? People are not learning about their role as members of the electorate.
Sure.
And even people getting elected, their roles as elected officials. And we're watching a breakdown of the fabric and the structure of our republic. And part of it is that they're not getting the right education at the right time to become good citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a travesty. And I think that's as big a threat as anything that's going on. We are now the sole single superpower in the world. Nobody's going to take us on frontally.
Mm-hmm.
But people are going to take us on in a lot of ways we've never thought about in the past. And as a people in a country that is a republic, we better get people that will do the job right. Think swap, trade, horse trade, get things done for the betterment of our country.
But what needs to be done to turn that around on the side of the elected officials as well as the side of the citizens?
Absolutely. Jerry Ford, I knew personally. His wife had an older brother who married my dad's only sister. So
okay.
We were related going back to when I was a little boy and started calling her Aunt Betty.
Okay.
Her name was Betty Bloomer before she married Jerry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
He knew when he became minority leader of the House, and of course the only job he ever said he had that he didn't get was Speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent 25 years in the House before Nixon, in trouble, picked him out to replace his disgraced Vice President Spiro Agnew.
Mm-hmm.
He knew those 12 years or so that he was minority leader, that if any part of the Republican agenda was to get in the law, he had to know how to make deals from weakness. He didn't have numbers.
Right.
The D's had the numbers.
Right.
And yet a lot of legislation had a lot of product from his party because he was able to work with somebody like Tip O'Neill, who
sure.
was then the Speaker when he was the minority leader.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when Jerry died, and I was at his funeral at Grace Church over mm-hmm. at Hall in Plymouth, there were several little short messages from people that could not be there. And Tip O'Neill was still alive, but he was not able to come to mm-hmm. Grand Rapids for the funeral. And what he said was, part of the American genius was that in times of great strife, like we found a person like Lincoln mm-hmm. during the Civil War. Jerry Ford was that kind of president.
Yeah.
And he was thinking of what he did. He sacrificed his future, that is, a successful run at a term of his own, to pardon Nixon, get him off stage.
Right.
That's the kind of statesmanship he had.
Right.
That's the kind of statesmanship where we put principle and the country first
mm-hmm.
and not ourselves or our party.
It's not a my way or the highway
thing. We have lost.
Sure.
And, you know, now that I'm in my 70s, I worry more
right.
about that legacy and the need to inspire generations coming after us that this is a dynamic governmental process. You have a role to play
right.
as a member of the electorate. Even if you never serve in public office, it's very important that you find out who
sure.
are the best qualified people and that you impose on them the duty to act on your behalf.
Right,
right now, the public approval of the U.S. Congress is at 10%. 10%.
It's horrible.
That means 90% of us don't think they're doing their job.
Right.
And, of course, the corrosive effect of the amount of money that's being spent now is another factor that sooner or later we're going to have to address in a more positive way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because if money is going to be the deciding factor of who gets into office, then we're going to be a one-party country.
Right, right.
Whether it's the IRD, I don't know, but it won't be two.
It's just an
unfortunate
situation.
Because one will just
situation.
Outspend the other to the point where they're buying the offices
mm-hmm.
and stuffing people into them that they want there to do their bidding.
Right.
And so I'm full of concern, but I'm also an optimist.
Sure.
I think that this country's history shows some major, major struggles. There have been very few civil wars in the history of the world as bloody as ours.
Mm-hmm.
And yet forged into and coming out of that crisis were the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments that made it very clear, because it needed to be made clear for once and for all, that all people really are equal in this Republican democracy. And so I'm going to tell you that I think we can survive this time, but we have to get back. We have to get the education back to our kids.
Sure.
And we need to get the education to the grown-ups who never got it.
Right.
To give them an understanding of how dynamic our government is, but it's grassroots-based and it's people-based, but then the people have to understand they got to do their part.
Right.
And, you know, as I said, the four times I went to the citizens for more money, I got the money. We used it the way we said we were going to use it, and we showed them the benefit.
Right.
And if I hadn't done that on the first one, I doubt that I could have gotten the second one.
Right, right.
And if we hadn't done that on the second one and so on, and if I'd stayed longer, I would have come again.
Sure, sure.
Because that's in the nature of the beast. There are what happens if we had another tornado like the one that went through Standale when I was in high school here in the 1950s? Come right through the heart of downtown Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think we'd need to raise some money
Absolutely.
To deal with the problem?
Right.
And don't we think that the citizens would have to say, we want it fixed? And yes, could we go to the state for help? Sure. Could we go to the feds for help? Sure. But a large piece is going to be right on our wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And the elected people have got to have a relationship with the people who elected them to say, here's why we need this money.
Right.
And here's how this much and what we intend to do with this money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then do it. Don't just take that money and now go over to your pet project over here and do something else. Do what you said you were going to do.
Right.
It's not that hard.
No, I agree. Well, thank you so much for joining me, former Mayor Logue. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, you let me do most of the talking, and that's always very dangerous, but I always appreciate it. But there was a lot here to get into a very small period of time, and I appreciate your patience, and I hope that our listeners will find something that they like, and quite frankly, I hope they find something that they don't like. That means their brain is engaged now,
sure.
And they are thinking about what a jerk I am if that's what they want to think.
Well, I always enjoy hearing your perspective.
Thank you
very much. Again, thank you very much.
My pleasure.